Chairman of the Economic Development Commission. I also have the pleasure of being chairman of the legislature's interim work group on economic and community development, and I know you'll be hearing a lot more about our work later during the day. I'm here to give an overview on the community solutions team and how it fits in with the interim work group's recommendations, because it really is an integral part of what we proposed. I want to begin by talking a little bit about the process, because it was a very, very extensive process. The last legislature, in its wisdom, realized that it wasn't just a question of appropriating more money, that we also needed to change the way the community solution agencies did business. And so they asked the interim work group to come up with recommendations. And the legislature appointed a very broad cross-section of business and governmental and community leaders that really represented all aspects of community solutions in all parts of the state. We held a year-long process, meetings around the state to take input and see what the problems were and what the best solutions were. And it was, from my experience, a very, very good and consensual process. Eventually, we came out with unanimity on a report that has some pretty strong and far-reaching recommendations, which I think is unusual. And it's been implemented already with some pretty significant successes. So we went through a long process to get here and basically involved all the interest groups, and at the end of the day, ended up with everybody signing off saying this is the way to go. What was the problem we were looking at? When we went around the state and talked to local communities, we heard repeatedly that there was a great deal of frustration with the way the state government was managing programs. And just to give you two very clear examples that stuck in my mind from the hearings, we were in St. Helens, and they were talking about an economic development project they had to improve a boat dock, which they needed for the community. And they went through a very long and involved process with the Economic Development Department to get everything lined up so they could put in this sewer holding tank on the dock. And they get to basically the end of the process, and all of a sudden, for their own good reasons, environmental quality has concerns with what was done. And the frustrations of having, you know, issues raised at the very end of all the work process was just overwhelming. They had to start all over. And the other example that really was the reason that when the governor first met with our committee and pointed us, he said, the lion's share of transportation funding in Central Oregon is going to the Bend Bypass. And if you think about it, we're building a bypass to build a bypass to bypass a bypass that was built years ago. And if we just done comprehensive planning for the original bypass, we could have avoided those hundreds of millions of dollars of expenditures that are now going to bypass the bypass. And so the whole point of the effort was to get the problem was agencies were in their silos doing a good job running particular programs, but the agencies among themselves weren't talking. They weren't reaching out to the local communities to solve their problems on the ground. We saw that as being the problem that we had to structurally change to solve. And so we looked around for what are potential models of solutions. And one of the models that jumped out right up front was the governor had already appointed a community solutions team of the department heads of the five affected agencies. And we met with them. They made a very strong presentation up front. And we came away believing that this was a good model for how agencies in general should focus, not just at the agency head level, that they needed to basically solve this problem of focusing on running programs and being apart from the local communities by having community solution teams in each region that could meet with the affected communities up front and solve the problems and not just run their programs. And so we saw the community solutions team model as being something that was applicable to the local level as well as the governor's office level. And so that is basically what we adopted in our report as a recommendation for the regional solutions teams. And it fits in extremely well with the Community Solutions team at the governor's level and the in the agency head level, because not only do you need to solve this problem of silos within the agency, you also have to solve a horizontal problem between different governmental jurisdictions and non-governmental players. And having the Community Solutions team at the agency level basically allows you to do several things. First of all, it's that pride to make sure that the local Community Solutions teams really do work and really are solving problems. Secondly, quite frequently, there are policy differences that come up in trying to solve a problem, because you have a law that's passed here, a law that's passed there, and sometimes they're not entirely consistent. So you need to raise it to a policy level to cut through those inconsistencies to get a solution. And last but not least, the Community Solutions team, in my opinion, gives you accountability. If it's not working at the local level, you got a place to go in the governor's office where you can say, fix this, or tell me why you can't. And so we saw the entire Community Solutions team model and the importance of at the agency and governor's office level as being fundamental to carrying out the recommendations of our interim work group. Obviously, to implement that solution, you need resources. We recognize that. And I think, you know, to me, that obviously we're very concerned about budget impacts and things like that, but I really think that this is a case where the ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. And I just come back to one of those examples that got us starting originally, you know, the Bend bypass. We are spending literally hundreds of millions of dollars to solve a problem that was totally avoidable if you had something like the Community Solutions team working up front. It was that we decided to put a road in without understanding the impacts on economic development and housing patterns and land use patterns. And now we have to go back and fix that poor planning up front at a huge expense. So as you consider the budget impacts, you know, I just try and put it in that broader context that I think this really is a case of an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. And I think the model of the Community Solutions team is one that is working very well, in fact, and has broad support among all the groups in the Community Solutions effort, and I think it's something that deserves your strong support.
Thank you very much for your comments, Brett. I want to ask a question on your vision for the Community Solutions team. You mentioned several times agency level and trying to coordinate policies amongst agencies. Do you also envision empowering people at the local level, representing those agencies to be qualified decision makers?
Absolutely, Senator Hannah. I think that's the key thing, is you want to put the decisions down to the grassroots. The big model is that you have all the people that are involved at the local level in a particular problem around the table together up front. You bring in all the agencies, regional people, and you say, you know, this is what we're trying to do, and you get everybody's buy-in. And if you get that buy-in up front, it goes a lot faster than if you get blindsided at the end by somebody. And so my view is that 80 or 90% of these things just should happen at the local level without the the governor's office or, agency head involvement. But there are always those issues that come up that require more involvement. And
yeah, those are rare, but if they do come up, they should have a means of coordinating it.
That's exactly right. And you also need that, higher level, basically, to make sure the resources are there for the people in the field and to just plot on and make sure it's getting done. And I think the thing, if I was a legislator, I would love the Community Solutions model, because if you got a problem in your district, you know who to call, and you can say, don't tell me that it's not this agency's problem or that agency's problem. Just fix it or tell me why you can't. I mean, you don't have that today, and this gives you that solution.
Are there any questions in Mr. Wilcox about community members? Cindy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Wilcox, you talked about resources and you talked about the community work team. I want to know, in your work together, what kind of measures do you use to measure the effectiveness of different programs? This way we can allocate our resources to where the program is considered as most effective. Can you enumerate what kind of measures of effectiveness do you use in your program?
That's a very good question. I am a very, very strong proponent of benchmarks and performance measurements. I think government does a good job of allocating dollars but doesn't keep track of what it's getting for those dollars as well as it should. And part of the community solution model is to say, yeah, we're going to give you, the local community, a lot more discretion and authority to do what you think needs to be done and the way you think it needs to be done. But you have to commit to measurable goals to show whether you're getting there or not. And what the particular benchmarks or performance measurements are will depend on what is the particular problem you're trying to solve. But for the model is that you'll have among the regional teams, you'll have some kind of an umbrella charter contract with broad benchmarks, and then as they move into particular projects, there'll be very clear performance measurements on what the state is getting for the resources it's contributing to the local problem. But those will vary whether, you know, depending on what the specific problem is.
Follow-up question. Well, we all want to look at benchmarks, and we all want to look at goals, but how do you decide what program really is doing what it's supposed to do over many other programs? So do you look at jobs? Do you look at what does it cost the state to provide those programs? Because if it costs us tons of millions, maybe we can't afford to do it. So what kind of measurement do you have?
You look at both the cost side. Clearly you have to look at that. But you also have to measure what's the result you're trying to get. For example, a good example, and it's not your agency, but it's what comes to mind, is in the job assistance welfare area, you know, we've tended to measure how many cases a particular caseworker handles and things like that. Well, that has nothing to do with the result you're trying to achieve. The result you're trying to achieve is to try and keep people off public assistance and in meaningful jobs. So if you change your performance measurements to how many people have you got into a good job and off welfare, you'll go a lot further to getting your goal than if you measure, you know, how many clients a particular caseworker served that week.
Another question.
Yes.
What I'm trying to get at is I'm really interested in seeing what does it cost the state for jobs we create. The goal of Economic Development Department is really to create jobs, to make sure we get the kind of return for investment and make sure the program is available to local community. You talk about 90% should be focused on local community. So I think these are some of the measurements we need to establish. I have asked Mr. Bill Scott for those information, and so far I have not received them completely yet. I've received incomplete information, and I'm trying to gather them as soon as possible so we can try to evaluate the programs and make sure we put money where it works. I understand the Small Business Center, the Small Business Development Center, is working well. It's cost effective, and it has 20 centers around the state, and it provides data to show we are getting a good return in investment. And they're asking for $2.5 million next biennium for the program, and this year is $1.8 million, and in your proposal you are flat funding it, and I don't understand the rationale behind it and what would you do so that we can put money where the program has shown to be effective.
very good question. First, I want to apologize generally if you haven't gotten the data. We will get it to you because it is available, and the Economic Development Commission reviews it regularly. You know, we measure, for the Economic Development Department, you make an investment in a particular project or program, you know, what, how many jobs is that created, you know, per dollar, how much of tax revenue is it brought in. So we have all that data available, and we'll get it to you right away. In terms of the small business development centers, that has been a very effective program, and it does create, you know, has a high leverage of creating new jobs, and it's one the commission has been very supportive of and will continue to be. We obviously want to fund it to the extent we can, and we're looking at, you know, how does the results they're getting compared to other results, but we're, you know, just realistically in a world where there's only a limited amount of resources, and you do have to make those trade-offs, and that is clearly something that has gotten results that we've been supportive of, and we'll you know, be as absolutely supportive as we can given the funds we have available.
Senator, I'm going to ask you if we can withhold our questions because this is more of an agency detail that we should wait until we get on the economic development budget. Today we have all these different agencies here to discuss the livability initiative, and I'd like to move to keep on that track because if we don't, we're going to lose some valuable time here. But when we do get on the budget, I think Mr. Wilcox and certainly Bill is well aware of what your issues are, and we can start working through those when we get on the budget, if that's acceptable to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to put my concerns up front so they can be prepared to respond to our concerns and our suggestions.
Well, you're welcome to visit with them right afterwards, and you can present all the things up front that you want to visit with them.
Okay.
All right. Brett, could I ask you to step aside for 1 second?
I would love to.
Senator Gordley, would you like to come forward and make some comments? Okay. I just wanted to extend the courtesy to you that we extend to all my fellow colleagues. Okay. Brett, I'll let you come back and take your position there.
Can I ask a general question, sir?
Yes.
Representative Schrader, Mr. Wilcox, I'm a supporter of this concept. I think the devil is usually in the details, obviously. I wondered if you had any vision as to the specifics of how this would actually work and who would be doing what, and if you had any objections to the legislature taking a hand in determining that.
No, I think the legislature should be involved in it. You need to be involved to be able to support it and follow through and make sure it's actually working. I think the key detail is going to be what people you get involved in. If you have the right people that are empowered, you know, in the regional level to do something, it'll get done. I think that's going to be the detail that either makes or breaks it. Do the people you have out in the regions have the authority to make a decision on the ground, or does it always go back to Salem no matter what? And so I think to the extent you can encourage the agencies to push decision-making authority down, you'll make it much more effective. And I think that's one of the reasons why you need to have, you know, strong support at the top of the agencies to make this model work.
Thank you.
Grace, would you like to be next and start off, please?
Certainly, Mr. Chairman. I think if I could, Bill or Susie, pass out a chart. I think it's good for you to know kind of the divisions that are developing. I don't know if Bill would be better place to tell me if they're actually done or not. But we're, and on the back of this map, what we've provided you is a map of the sort of the way the regions, I guess, are breaking out. And then if you flip it over to see who our representatives are at the present time on the back, just for the kind of ongoing management of this. I guess I wanted to answer a couple of questions. One, we got to this with some transportation funds. Why in the heck would transportation want to foot the bill for part of this so directly? I'm worried about getting the best bang for my buck out of my transportation dollars. And you might think that the best way to do that is would be for every dollar to go into the pavement. But as it turns out, the decision-making that precedes our investment is really far more important than
than any $1 that goes into the pavement, and that's because you don't want to pave the wrong road. Well, we have some technical analysis that take care of preservation of our roads, but trying to determine some of the other investments for improvements, where we put our improvement dollars, really come from discussions with the community. And my staff is very good at sitting at the table and representing the transportation interests and the transportation impact, but they're not very good at knowing anything about housing or economic development, nor do I want to staff up to you know, be aware of that. So if you talk about that, we're proposing in this budget, to answer the most direct question that's been put to me, why would you spend $7 million of transportation money? We're proposing to take some of the T21 money, put it into this program, and staff up some of our counterparts around to deal with the issues. We seem to be, in my experience with this outfit, and I've only been with it for about 2 years, but we seem to be, when it comes down to everything, generally speaking, one of the main improvements that has to happen, whether you're over in Ontario, this is sort of evolving, but whether you're over in Ontario and you're superseding some prisons, or whether you're having some discussions on some land development in North Plains, when it comes down to the end and who's impacted and who's got to reach into their budget to actually make an improvement of some kind, it's transportation dollars. And so I'm interested in the trade-off. I'm interested in the discussion happening up front so that we can make the better investment or make fewer investments, actually. And that's what I think happens. If you have a better plan put together, you make more targeted investments. One. Two, I took seriously, I had a couple conversations with folks, and the concern is this is money that could go into the road, and I took that charge seriously, and we've gone back to staff to see if we can pull out of, we've had some increases in T21 funding that goes for what we call SPR, which is special planning and research money, and the federal government has several other programs related to not development per se, but innovative transportation kinds of things. And we're trying to go back to the budget and find that 3.7 out of dollars that could not go into the road, as it were, so that the trade-off is even easier for this committee to make, because I understand there's some support for the concept, but some concern for the dollars that are spent. And so we've gone back into both the headquarters budget and the region budget, and I wished I'd had it done before now. I'm sorry I don't. But we're closing the details to see if we can't offer you a package that uses more special research money to make some other reallocations so you could see that directly. And then the last question I'd like to address is the decision-making down at the bottom level. Mr. Chairman, you've asked us to make sure we're doing that, and that's what we're trying to do. And I think Mr. Wilcox did a good job of saying that you try and empower everything you can down to the local level, but there's going to be something that comes to Salem. And I think about in transportation, we have some rules, statewide consistency, rules, operating procedures, where we worry that someone in Astoria says that's a fine thing to do, and we're saying no over in Bend, okay, or we're saying yes in Brookings and no to LeGrand. We have ongoing, much like a city, ongoing operation issues that a lot of these other state agencies don't have. We are, you know, we're fixing street lights and street signs and potholes, and we're out in every community. And so I have an operational issue for consistency where I end up being the bad guy in this group. And what my pledge is I can't say that every waiver that needs to be given is going to be given at the local level, but what I can say is that our folks know, the folks that are on the back of this page that represent ODOT and the communities, everyone involved in the community solutions team, know that their job is to bring a solution to Salem. It's their job to be the liaison to the local group, so if they see things coming, they know what they're going to rub up against with transportation rules and procedures and laws. They know that what guides us, and as they see them coming, it's their job to get their tail to Salem and work out if it's a right-of-way issue, and we have, you know, the right-of-way decisions are made in Salem. And then as we work through that process, we will see if there aren't some systematic ways for us to empower further. At the present moment, what I can promise is a quick response from Salem to the liaison, and it basically this person that is out in the region acts as an advocate for the locals, and their charge for me is to bring a solution forward. Don't come crying and blaming Salem. Come in and say, here's how we think we can do it. The economic development's going to do this. Here's the housing need. You know, can't we stretch it? So, and then we move to the next phase, which is artisan things that can get put out in the region, and we'll, as we've had the experience, we've been kind of keeping our eye open for what can be further pushed out of Salem. I think those are the three points I wanted to make.
appreciate that. I think part of the frustration on the part of legislators is that they'll call an agency head basically says, you know, it sounds like a good idea, why don't we go ahead and pursue it? And then it doesn't get funneled down to the local decision makers, and the local decision makers out there saying, we can't do it because of us, us, and us. And then it never gets channeled back up to the chain of command. And I think if I could single out one issue of why there's such, I don't want to refer to it as distrust, but suspicion on the part of legislators towards some state agencies is that we have not had good communications. And good communications is a two-way street. It requires legislators to certainly communicate, but it requires agencies to communicate with legislators. And I think if we're short on a deficiency, this can probably be an area that we need to improve on. But I've gotten local people in local agencies and been turned down, called the agency head, oh yeah, sounds great, let's go ahead and do it. And then it just is in limbo. And I think that's part of the frustration, Grace, that we're all talking about, that we really don't know who to go to the designated team leader and start the process, even at the local level. I have cities and counties always coming to me wanting me to intervene on their behalf because they are not quite comfortable on who to select at the local level to dialogue with. And so that's why I hope for the best that we're able to do this and achieve it, because goodness knows this is a process that is long overdue.
Mr. Chairman, part of what we're trying to do, and I think Brett Wilcox tried to say that, is identify who it is you do need to go to. If it's just a transportation issue, it's a transportation issue, but where I find legislators involved a lot, which makes a lot of sense, is where different agencies come together, whether it's two or five or six. And what we've tried to do is not only put down who our representative is here, but who the chair is. In some cases it rotates and it's not quite as clear, but it's clear every year who the chair is. So we've done our part to try and identify those problem solvers.
Couple of questions here. Kind of amazing, actually, in one respect, that the Department of Transportation is willing to share its dollars with other agencies. I mean, that's probably pretty unique in my short tenure here at the legislature, where the dollar and the budget for each agency is pretty preeminent. So I guess I'm kind of my hat's off to the agency willing to help foot the tab for other agencies. At least that's the way I've heard it presented in what you said here, and I think that's really a good thing, maybe, that we're starting to break down some of the institutional barriers and work together. So I think that's a real positive step. And I guess the question I'd ask is, given the fact that the Transportation Department, through the federal funding, is putting money into this, do you assume then that the Transportation Department is going to be driving this, or do you see yourself as just one of the partners in this whole project?
Chairman Hannon, Representative Schrader, I'm not paying for the total freight. When you talk about the community solutions team effort, if you take Repine's outfit, for example, they've already got some people out there. This is paying a portion of that. And the answer is no. I'm not planning on driving it. What I found is it's like hiring a consultant. You can either hire them and tell them, give them your watch and tell them what time it is and ask them to write the report and give it to you, which I think is not very well spent money, or you can invest and ask for some expertise. I view this as an investment in expertise that help us. My engineers get wrapped all the time, and Senator Dukes and I have had several conversations about this. In engineering school, they don't teach people skills. For some reason, there's not an extensive course there. And so I find when I get the best bridge engineers, I don't always get the best public relations people or the best people to talk to a county commissioner, unless the county commissioner came up through the road department, okay, in which case the conversation goes pretty smoothly. So what I think we're buying is some other people to participate in the conversation, so we're not the big bad ODOT saying, I can see the solution, this is it. I don't know what the problem is, but here's the solution. And so these folks are there to beat up on my guys, and the structure is set up as such so that they have to look at the total problem. I brought a map of, it's been mentioned before, of North Plains, and the process is still going on in North Plains, but this just gives you kind of a very graphic very graphic description of, you can envision that the answer isn't here yet, but North Plains can decide to grow in four different ways, okay? And I've got four interchanges that are possible improvements that can be made along the way, and I've had some discussions with people at this committee about some of those. But where they choose to grow affects my interchange, and I can probably, you know, various of these crossings are at different stages, but you can see just by where someone would pick to grow which pink box, without going into the details of this specific example, which pink box North Plains decides to choose. For example, they were actively considering the south expansion. For us, that creates a huge amount of traffic that goes across 26, which we would just as soon avoid. Well, it seems very obvious to us, but I'm sure if we walked in and explained in very blunt terms how obvious it was to us, we wouldn't get quite as far as if we had some of these other interests in there doing our explaining for us. So the plannedness of it, how well planned it is, makes a big impact on these interchanges, and they can basically, you know, send the needs up on my organization. This is Highway 26, if I didn't make it clear in the beginning. So if you put any kind of interchange over it, it's a very significant state highway. It's a route from Portland to the coast. A lot of people travel it. We have a lot of safety issues out there right now, and for someone just to make a decision to plunk a community down there, the community solution team is the kind of team that could go in, and we could have a more well-rounded discussion, and I think my agency's going to come out better from getting a black eye for just being brute force, and I think my budget's going to come out better because we'll have a planned investment rather than having you know, needs on both ends or in four different places.
Representative Starr, before I recognize you, Representative Taylor, would you like to come up and join the committee? Senator Rudley, would you like to come up and join the committee too, so you might ask some questions? There's plenty of room. Okay, Representative Starr. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Great, just had a quick question. You've identified all these folks in the different regions here. Are these folks on the ground now doing the job that we're asking them to do?
Chairman Hannon, Representative Starr, yes, they are. If I could just give you a couple caveats. These people that are here right now, if you look at Eastern Oregon, for example, Tom Schuff is the regional manager out there. He is the regional manager for everything you see here. His job is already filled up right now. I mean, he does not have, he's spread about, well, you can see by the territory, he's spread about as soon as can be. So he desperately needs someone else to do that job, and we are backfilling with some staff for him. But I have staff on the ground out in Eastern Oregon. What I find is, look at the territory this encompasses. You want to go from, you know, Ontario to LeGrand up to I-84 is up here. I've got district offices scattered all over here, and so if part of the problem is we're doing two things in two places, I can get someone from an office that's located in Alvear County to substitute at a meeting. But what I find is our guys say, well, we showed up and the local showed up, but not always it was someone able to make it from one of the other agencies. You don't have to like GLCD for a number of things, but I have 3,000 people out around the state cleaning up roads and stuff, and they can attend occasional meetings. DLCD has a total of roughly 50, I think. So when we start going into intense negotiations with these local communities, they don't have the, I'll call it diversion power, which is the way it feels when you first start. You begin to realize that it's a way of doing business and making decisions eventually.
Yes, so all these folks around here from all the different agencies that are on the ground now, and they're all being paid by, they're all on the state payroll at this time, right?
Yes, correct. Chairman Hannon, Representative Starr, right?
Okay, Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just two issues. Number one, I really do appreciate the tremendous amount of communication that we do receive and Eastern Oregon. I mean, that becomes key, and that's critical to what we're talking about, is the level of communication that we receive. as citizens, as legislators, as local government officials. And even still to this day, I'm on the blast email for all of the meetings that are, and that's fine. I appreciate knowing because I can open it up and see what they discussed in their last meeting and what their agenda is for the next meeting. But I am concerned that sometimes we get plans and draft plans that appear to change the goalposts, and those don't appear to be bottom driven as much as those are top driven down. Is that can you help me with that, please, Grace? I need to know where the rule making comes from, and how much flexibility we have in the various regions, because certainly the transportation issues, excuse me, the transportation issues of Eastern Oregon might be considerably different than the Mid Valley Coast region.
Chairman Hannon, Senator, Representative Butler, there's a balance in there, and I don't think we strike it as often as we'd like to. We have rules that we operate by. We have statutes that we operate by. The ability to say no is in the region. Every region has the ability to say no. The ability to say yes is partially in the regions and partially in Salem. And so what we're trying to do when these problems come up that are, you know, multidimensional is we're trying to get to a yes. Community has a vision. It's different than where they are now. That's why it's a vision. They're trying to get someplace. And they need to make some changes to do that. When our transportation system is affected, and transportation is the only one I can speak to, is affected, they go to the rule book and they open the rule book up. And they do the best they can to get there. What we're trying to do is not have the rule book change every so often, because consistency and knowing what the standards are is important. But what the community solutions team allows people to do is come to understand the nature of the problem and what different people. If you just look at the transportation problem, often the answer is no. If housing has something to offer or economic development, more often we're partnering with Bill on some things. They can provide a little bit of the grease to pay for something that maybe the road fund can't pay for. Then what happens is they bring that solution to Salem, and while we're not breaking the rule, we are kind of bending it. They want to check with Salem, but they've got a solution put together. I don't think you want to give the right to I don't know, I'll call it break the rules, but have an exception out there without some checking, you know, back. But what these guys do that they are predisposed to get to yes, and opposed to saying no off the bat, all the way through the process with other state agencies and locals feeding on them, okay? They are predisposed to say, well, wait a minute, I've seen this happen around this communication that takes place statewide, for example. And so they can say, you know, I remember that in North Plains we did this, or in, you know, Salem we did that.
Sure. Yes, the follow-up on that, the concern that I have is that they, again, using your words, they have the ability to say no, but they don't have the ability to say yes. And so, I mean, basically what we're saying is that it's all top-driven, then, because what we get locally is no, but if you want to go higher, you're welcome to go ahead and try and work your way through.
Chairman Hannon, Senator Butler, what the community solutions team do is automatically create a hire to go to. These guys come to Salem with the yes in mind. They show how we can get there, and they've already made it easy for if the person is followed, you know, is for the waiver to be granted automatically instead of coming and asking a specific question. There's a package. The justification is there, the advocate for, the attorney for the case, and the case has been put together with a broad, with not just the community in mind, but the other state agencies that come up with part of the solution. So oftentimes the problem with us is a road problem, but we can't use a road fund to pay for other solutions. And so the other agencies come up with that piece, so the communities have all of the assets of the state at their disposal as they try and create a solution.
Thank you. Representative Patrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I apologize for being late, and I didn't get to hear what Mr. Wilcox had to say this morning, but My concern, Mr. Wilcox, if you could respond to this, over the course of looking at these community solutions teams, and we have a pilot in Medford, and I've met with the governor's office several times to try and resolve some of the issues I have, but my concerns are similar to Representative Butler's in that, one, I think the community solutions concept or the model it creates should be doing, that should be occurring throughout state government and should have continued to occur throughout state government, not just at the community solutions team, but at every level. And I told someone the other day that we're going to have agencies write letters back and forth to each other. I think you should fire someone who doesn't pick up the phone. And if another agency writes them and there's a problem, pick up the phone and say, how can we resolve that? I mean, I think that that's what good government and good management is about. Unfortunately, that doesn't occur. And so now we've kind of created these community solutions teams as a model, I guess, at the local level. But I'm concerned with, one, the accountability, who they're accountable to, and who you as the concepting group kind of give birth to these things. Who are they going to report to? Not only from the five agencies that are involved, but you're also asking for a management person to be involved in that. My concern, that's my first question, is what kind of authority and what kind of, and who they're going to report to, and what the vision wants for that. So I'll let you answer that question first. Or, you know, I've asked the governor's office numerous times about this, and so I'm trying to resolve the issue.
I think they're accountable first to the local community that they're trying, whose problems they're trying to serve, and they have to work with those people and try and get the yes. They also are accountable to the community solutions team in the governor's office, and that's where I think is one of the major changes. You can go to those people, for the first time you can go to the governor's office and say, we got this problem in our district, they're not being able to solve it at the agency level, you know, cut through the stuff and let's either get it done or tell me why you can't. And I think that that's a whole new level of accountability that hasn't existed. One of the reasons we did the pilot programs is we knew that this was a pretty major transition for state government. You know, it has tended to break down not just silos between agencies, but silos within the agency, you know, defined by this is my program and you know, it's somebody else's fault if it doesn't get done. And so it's a pretty major task to break that down. And we thought we needed to have a broad range, you know, of different pilots to try and have make it work so you can expand it. And I hope I've been hearing good things about your pilot. I know there have been some bumps along the road, but I thought overall the Economic Development Department had a meeting down in Medford, and it seemed like the community at the time was very supportive and things were going well. If there's a problem there, I want to make sure that we solve it.
I guess, as a follow-up, Mr. Chair, there's some other issues going on down there, and we've discussed this other people before, but my concern is, that's great that there are accounts, but where do you envision the manager for the local community solutions? I mean, are they going to report directly to the governor's office? You know, I just wonder how effective these five people can be if the people who are there at the ground level accountable to the community, their own community solutions teams members accountable to the community that they're in, how they can be effective if they still have to be accountable to a great degree up their own line. I mean, basically, they're going to be the tattletales for the, you know, for lack of a better term, the tattletales that say our agency is dysfunctional and we can't work this out at the local level. And I'm wondering, you know, do you see the regional manager reporting to the governor's office? I don't want to approve this until I get some clear definition about where the accountability is going to come from and where the decision-making, and who's going to have the decision-making.
You know, I'm a business person, and business faces this all the time. You have matrix organizations where everybody has some traditional line responsibility, and you put them off on a project, and they have other responsibilities. And at the end of the day, you're right. You know, these people all, their check comes from the agency that they work for, and so that's their primary line of accountability. But they also are on the community solutions team in the region, and they have a secondary line of accountability, which goes, for all these members, it goes to the chairman of the, you know, the regional community solutions team, and from that chairman, it goes to the community solutions team in the governor's office. And to me, that's why you need to, at the state level, you need to have somebody that cuts through that, you know, 20% of the problems that they can't resolve at the local level. And you need to have the department heads, you know, get together and do it. And ultimately, what this model does is make the governor accountable, because if the five community solution agency heads can't solve it, that's the governor's problem.
One more thought.
Yes, please.
Just as you're envisioning them reporting directly to the management, people reporting directly to the governor's office, not through DAS, not through someone else. I'm just asking what the vision was of the who first community solution.
Well, my personal view is it should be, ultimately the governor should be accountable. I think, you know, this is a much broader issue. Oregon's got a pretty screwed up system where all the agencies and report to boards and commissions and not to the governor. And this is one way to try and make sense of that system.
And in terms of beyond the just the community solutions level people, is what's the plan? I mean, you're adding 120 hours worth of government staff time in each of the regions you're asking for. I had some concern about lists of projects, and the governor's office is trying to provide me with some of those. So is there any plan to make these people try and help the rest of the state government? I went to a liberal arts college, so I try. So I was trying to think out of the box. I went to the one across the street, I guess, to look at those things. What I'm trying to do is figure out, do you feel like these community solutions teams also have an obligation to help work on those, on the other parts of making government talk to each other at all the other levels, too, instead of, let's just put it down to the community solutions team and they can deal with it.
I think eventually that's true, but I'm a firm believer you've got to go through the layers of the onion, and first you got to make your regional pilot work, because if you can't do it at that small scale, they can't, you know, expand it to other parts of the government. So I think we want to get there eventually, but let's get some concrete successes.
To follow up on the representative question, I think his concern is similar to mine, that the local community, supposedly solutions team, now is a buffer between the local community and state agencies. And not always are we able to penetrate that buffer. And that's why we're hoping that the community solutions team tears down that wall, tears down that buffer, and actually is empowered to go sit down and say, we agree on your assessment here, we need to work cooperatively together, and have the power to bring in other agencies, not to dictate policy to them, it's contrary to their policy, but to coordinate it. And I think that's part of the frustration with a lot of legislators, is the local contact person, unfortunately, for whatever reason, probably the last 140 years has been the buffer. The flack person, the person who gets all the flack, and then the agency doesn't hear the effects of it unless it's so egregious that all of a sudden somebody takes it over their head to the next level. And I'll tell you, Brett, I'm really excited about the potential for what we can do here, because this is being innovative and creative and something that should have probably been looked at 50, 60 years ago, easy. And it's even more incumbent on it now as we go through anticipated planning and growth and development, and making sure that we coordinate our policies, just like the Bend bypass that you indicate. Medford's kind of in a similar situation with a bypass. And people are the first ones to complain, but they're the last to support a solution. And what we have to do is be able to bring collectively people together in the community and say, what do you want to achieve? And then how do we set about doing it? Representative Schrader.
A couple of quick questions for Trey. I indicated that, and others have too, that some of these decisions will ultimately have to be made in Salem or the final authority. I guess the question would be, you know, who do you envision in Salem handling this or having the authority to do so from your department and that person's relationship to the governor's office, as per Mr. Wilcox and Representative Patrick's discussion? And then you also indicated a quick response from Salem. I wondered what sort of time frame that meant.
Senator Hannon, Representative Schrader, Chairman Hannon, Representative Schrader.
first of all, when I talk about transportation needing response from Salem, frequently there's not one person sitting in Salem that needs a response. It's the person on the team sitting there watching something evolve. So they may know that what they've got on their hands is a right-of-way problem, or what they've got on their hands is a use of state funds problem, or whatever. And so whatever the problem, it may involve a solution not with a Salem person, but with a DED person. Just by having the transportation person sit at the table, they identify the problem. We have Dave Bishop is our coordinator. The goal here is to rotate him through about every 18 months, not to have someone permanently there. But the ultimate goal here is to have the agencies incorporate this approach in everything they do. So the idea isn't to isolate this group. The idea is that, I mean, from where I sit, I'm trying to give my folks exposure to this so that it becomes a way of acting, if you will. And so, and when you say, when the question is, what kind of a, you know, response is timely, a one-week turnaround is a timely response. If you're talking about legal search of documents, ownership of property and everything, you may be talking about a two-week response. But the idea is you put someone out there who's the representative to the public. They need some backup, and we need to get it. So it may touch six different aspects of what we do back there. The idea is to have that advocate understanding the broader problem, not just the transportation problem, and then trying to come back to, and talk to the folks. All of these people that are involved in the Community Solutions team have had enough exposure to the agency to know who's where. It's not a mystery to them. It's a mystery to the poor person that's just on the city council that ran to try and get a new project, happening, which may be to lure a natural resource agency to house their office in a certain location or something. I mean, so there's an institution that Salem, I think these are basically advocates that come back to Salem to try and make sure that transportation is getting its response together so it can say yes. That's the way I characterize it. Also, if I could give a quick response to an earlier question, we are, as Representative Patrick, maybe I should really talk him back there, but we are already coordinating with the natural resource agencies and talking about what's there. And what I would say is we've got a core group of folks called the Community Solutions Team that really matches sort of the local government. If they want to grow and develop and expand and bring new business into town, it's the problems of growth and the problems of attracting growth that they're dealing with to a large extent. And we are kind of the key agencies there. Then you fold in when the problem involves the Division of State Lands, or the problem involves state police or some other state agency or prisons or whatever, corrections. Then we have a core group of people that are sort of trained, and it's really they're led by the economic development folks. They've got that kind of hustle about them that says, well, wait a minute, let's get them in now. Let's not wait till later. Let's get the real estate people in now, or whatever. So it's kind of there's a synergism of those of us that are sort of the development agency that are impacted by development agency. And then if the miscellaneous issue affects, the people worrying about getting people jobs over in DHR or something, or a social program or something, then we call them in. But it's a state agency kind of thing, and if the state agency is kind of slow to get in, they have a quick contact to the governor's office, and they give a call to DHR and say, get to the table, where you're screwing up our act.
Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to reiterate, this has been no secret, that I've served on one of these community solutions teams. I gave Greg Wolf, who reported just briefly about it, a little bit of a hard time, because he said one of the things it does is it helps the agencies communicate amongst themselves. You get the agencies at the table. And then he said it also then helps the agencies communicate with local government. And the third part that he missed was that it also helps local government communicate with local government, because everybody's at the table, and that probably is as much benefit as it is to have the agencies communicating one with another.
Senator Duke.
I think that's the Senator's interruptive question and your answer. These are all funded now, all nine of them. No?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I am Bob Repine, Director of Housing and Community Services, Senator Duke. If you look at that slip chart, and I was going to make a point of this in my presentation, but I'll go ahead and state it now. In those regions that you see identified, there are nine regions. I have effectively four people
who manage anywhere between four of the groups, two and two. So they cover a multitude of those regions. They're currently the people that I have in my agency. Really, they are the entire out-of-Salem body experience for the housing department. They are the four people who currently do the housing calls relative to communities and trying to make assessments on the need for housing and affordable housing. And so along with their work activity now, we have kind of folded this into their current activity. So along with their day-to-day activities of covering the same geographical part, four people covering the entire state of Oregon, doing their day-to-day business with your communities on housing opportunities, they're also following on CST activities relative to those same geographical areas that they cover.
Okay, so they're serving on the teams now. They're covering
more by default.
You would like to use transportation money to save you from taking housing money to put into hiring new people?
No, Mr. Chairman, Senator Dukes, the goal, I think the way the budget suggests, it would be my department would include an additional four people, so it would be four plus the four I already have. So geographically, I can do a better job of servicing my communities and fulfilling the ongoing demands that are being placed on them relative to this, the ramp-up and the successes of community solutions activities.
Didn't do that. Would you come and ask for additional people, or would you continue what you're doing now?
I would be coming to ask, depending on the status of community solutions, if community solutions went away, then I would have to reassess their existence just for the services of housing and affordability.
I'm saying that they stayed, but we didn't take the transportation money and buy housing representatives with it.
The two solutions would be I would either not either have the presence in the field to meet the expectations of what we think community partners want, so there would be a lack of participation by us or a lacking of participation, and or I could, I suppose, or this body could ask whether or not I could fund a position or two in some capacity through other funds to duplicate this. I suppose that is an option.
Let me interrupt here. Senator Nelson, did you want to come forward and make any comments? Would you like to join the committee? Are you here for the work? Okay. You're here for the work group?
Yeah.
Okay. We're trying to do the presentation here first of the community solutions teams and the livability issues, and then we'll take you to shorthand to that.
My suggestion, I apologize for interrupting.
Yes,
Brett. We've had, you know, I'm available at the committee's pleasure anytime you want, and obviously the department heads are, but we have people that come from all around the state to report on the work group.
Yeah, that's fine.
To get
if we could move, because we only have about 40 minutes to cover the work group now.
That would
I'm
be
not
great.
Trying to shut off your questions, but the agency heads are pretty much here most of the time. Occasionally they leave town for whatever reason.
Never seen so staying in one room.
Representative Schrader.
Gordon, I appreciate everyone coming from all over the state. I think that's very, very important. But I think for this particular project, the most important thing for this committee and for the legislature is to figure out how it's going to work. And that, unfortunately, does require, or fortunately, requires us to talk with the heads of these departments. So if we don't get to it today, I think it's extremely important that we hear from each of the rest of the departments, so that, like we've heard from transportation, about what they see, what their envisioning is, and they're helping us design the model so we can actually get the job done.
This committee schedule is the Department of Transportation the rest of this week, Department of Transportation next week with a work session scheduled for Thursday and Friday of next week, and Economic Development Department the following week. So we're going to be in through this. I think we have a work session scheduled for Housing Community Services on Friday of this week. So it's not a dead issue, and it's going to be revised many times.
Okay.
Thank you, all of the participants. Senator Dean.
I wanted to say, I'm talking about, like I was going to publish, I still have difficulty in understanding how the state level of this works. I'm not convinced it's working the way it ought to be working or that we need it. We had this long conversation yesterday about hiring people in the field who are qualified, training them to do what they're supposed to do, and then letting them do it, which sort of flies in the face of what we're talking about today. But I'm glad all of these people came, but I'm convinced that the community solutions seem to work on the local level. So, I guess they don't need to be convinced of that.
Representative Turner, do you have a question? Okay. Representative Patrick?
We're going to have some more questions. I was just going to say, when I worked in a company and our department had to get along, we put them all in the same office until they got along and their departments got along. So, if that's what we have to do, that's what we're doing with the community solution team to some extent.
Thank you, Mr. Refine.
Bob and Gray and North and Sharon.
Grant, would you call your panelists up?
Didn't they come up? And
since it's a small table, my suggestion is taking them two phases. First for our legislative members, because one of the unique things about the interim work group is not only do we have broad segment of business and community and local government leaders, we also have legislative representatives who were very active participants, and I'm sure that they would. Since they have to get to other hearings.
Okay. Senator Guardian, Senator Nelson, Representative Taylor. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair. My name is David Nelson, State Senator from Pendleton, and I was involved in the interim work group on economic development, and they did an excellent job. I can tell you there's a lot of very in-depth discussion, and people agreed and disagreed, and I think they came up with a very good product of the things they're doing. I've listened to your testimony, and I can just tell you the committee solution thing did cause some problems within a lot of the areas, but it's a workable situation. I guess I'm looking for my district. We have an excellent community solutions team working at the local level, and I like that concept. I think the problem that we had, at least from the counties and the folks that I've talked to out in my area, is the fact that they were concerned that if you created another statewide bureaucracy, that would somehow interfere with the... Wow. That would interfere with the work that's going on the local level. And from the testimony I've heard from this, that you folks have heard, is that you're concerned about that also. But I can tell you that the community solutions team, at least in our area, has worked on about, I have four projects that I can cite right now. One is the Sykes project in Mountain Free Water. There's an Oregon Dental Service project in LeGrand. There's a Port of Marl in Marl County. And in Wallowa County, there's been disaster grants and some construction on wastewater systems and things like that, where the five community or agencies have gotten together at the local level and have made it work. So it is a workable solution. I think the real issue that I'm hearing is that do we want more money at the local level to do more work? The fear is that if the money goes to the state level, then you don't get those projects done. That's my impression. I think that the telecommunications is a big part of this. I think there's some other bills that we've got going through. I have the Senate Bill 142 the House is listening to right now. There's some money involved in there. I think that's a crucial part of this. To me, it comes down to the issue of the oversight question: how much oversight do you need at the state level, and how do you get that money down to the local level and trust the people at the local level and give them some flexibility? And I know that you're all aware of that, and I'll pass this on to Senator Gordley.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Avell Gordley representing Senate District 10. And just to say a brief word about the makeup of my district, which very much drives my interest in economic development issues. I come from a district that is bordered by the Columbia River on the north that includes Portland International Airport that has a wealth of small business development And I come to this session with a great deal of enthusiasm and I'd say even passion for the work that we are talking about today. I was very pleased to participate on the work group. I was initially appointed as an alternate to Senator Lim. We had just three legislators on the work group initially, Representative Westland, Senator Lim, and myself. And it became apparent early on that we really needed to engage more legislators in this work, and we were fortunate to get the talents of Representative Taylor and Senator Nelson, Representative Welsh. We met all over the state. One of the things I was really impressed with through our process was how engaged, how fully engaged. We hear that phrase a lot, but it was really true in this case. All of the partners were, whether we're talking about the ports, the counties, the cities, the community-based economic development advocates. I think of a group of people that I've been particularly concerned about, and that's the women in minority-owned businesses and the fact that they also had a seat at the table and were actively involved, and that their issues also got addressed in the process. And you will, as you read the report, and I do encourage you, I know we're all bombarded with too much to read, but please take time to review the report and understand its content and ask questions. Continue to do what you're doing this morning, which is raise hard questions, provide the constructive criticism, but use us, those of us who participated on the work group, talk to us outside of this hearing today to get additional information. Mr. Chair, there's something else I'd like to do with my time. I'd just like to take a different tack. You know, we know that there are communities that did not participate in the economic boom of the state. We have rural and urban distressed communities and populations, and that's where we're trying to redirect a lot of our resources. And if we're going to do that effectively and well, then that means we've got to listen differently to the people on the ground who know what their problems are and also know how to get those problems solved. We've seen that working well up in part of my district through the work that's going on to revitalize Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard, and we have a community solutions team that's actively engaged up there, changing the whole look of the boulevard, not just the look, creating jobs and making the boulevard a place that people want to visit and also a place where people want to live. Let me just stop here. There's something I want to do because it's been my observation over time, the 4 terms that I've served in the legislature, that one of the things we do not do well, and I include myself in this sometimes, is thank people enough. And so I want to just on this record thank, first of all, the people at the department who worked so hard through the interim, starting with Bill Scott, Sam Serkin, his deputy, Doris Penwell, I'm saying her name twice because I do believe there are at least two of her, for the incredible amount of work and support that they provided to the work group. I know that we have members of the commission here as well. They're all volunteers doing extraordinary work on behalf of the state. These are all committed people. These are not clock watchers. These are folks who really believe in the future of our state and want to be a part of creating a place that we can all be proud of. So I would like to take some of my time and just ask that the staff who are here, Bill Scott, Doris Penwell, there may be others, please stand. I'd like the commissioners to stand. And I would like us to give them a round of applause because they have worked hard to produce the documents that you have in front of you, and they deserve all the praise. And the commissioners didn't stand, but you'll see them shortly, and they'll tell you what they have to say about this good work. I just want to end by, again, encouraging you to become deeply familiar with the work of the Economic Development Department, and more deeply familiar with the work of the interim work group. There are lots of advocates in this building for, you know, education, whether it's Head Start, K-12, higher ed, and a lot of the other issues that we all care about. But I would like to see us develop more advocates for economic development, and I know some of them are sitting on this committee. And with that said, I'll be quiet and go on to my next assignment. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Representative Weston, Franklin Clarkson, our legislative colleagues, we have a 9:45 session in the Senate. There are some commissioners here from out of town that would like to hear from. I'm not trying to tell you what to do, but short is better.
Representative Westland.
Great job, Representative Westland, Central Oregon, District 55. There's very little I could say after Avell's, Senator Gordley's eloquent words. I, too, would like to join what I hope is our harmonious chorus of applause for the work that was done by the interim study. It was very inclusive. It was very collaborative, and I think a major turning point came, a signal that we were on the right track. And I just want to give one example. Was Trey Sen from Klamath Falls, a member of the Jobs Coalition, who was adamantly opposed to the work we were doing. It was new. It created somewhat anxious moments and anxiety among our county commissioners and pure jobs people. Trey Sen was a very vocal critic of our initial work, and then finally through, you know, an inclusive process with Mr. Sen, the Jobs Coalition, he became one of our largest supporters, and that's just one of many indications of the type of work that was done to include everyone in this process. So, again, please, and I echo Senator Gordley's words, look at the study, look at the work. It's really something I was part of, and I'm quite proud of. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Taylor, welcome.
Thank you, Senator, and thanks for allowing me to sit in on the earlier discussion. I think I was added to the work group in December of 97 because I was one of the persons who were disgruntled at the end of the last session about economic development being reorganized and rearranged in my view. We actually have utilized the programs that the agency has offered very well out in the region I represent, which is Region 1, from Astoria upriver through SCAPHOOS. And it actually has been those programs that have offered us a little ray of hope in very tough economic times in the mid-80s and allowed us to extend the water line out to Tongue Point and given us some water, wastewater study monies, and it helped us in many ways. But I think often we as legislators don't recognize how well utilized some of the programs are from the division. So I was added late. I wasn't at the initial meeting. And I must tell you that I was a bit of a curmudgeon there. Judge White, probably, and from Harney County, and I often took that role. But we felt we were heard. I think Chair Wilcox ran a very good work group. We actually were working too. One of our last meetings was held in my district in St. Helens, and there one of the announcements was that this would be a pilot for the project. And I can tell you that that hasn't just been all smooth sailing. The my home county, Clatsop County, kind of drug their feet, worried still about what it would mean if they joined with the others in the region to prioritize and work toward the same goals. But I certainly do feel that we are, in fact, continuing the work that I believe the agency had begun prior to the legislation last time to focus on some of our rural and distressed areas. We have low unemployment, actually, in my district. So we have many people who are working two jobs to pay the rent and are one paycheck from homelessness, and we're very much, in fact, underemployed. So we still look to these programs, and I'm particularly excited about the technical assistance that I see that is available through the evolution that we've seen. we tried very hard as a work group to ensure that those areas that were more sophisticated in their application process would not be treated in a better way than those that were less sophisticated. And I think that's important for all of us. So it's my pleasure to endorse the work of the work group and to have been a part of it, and appreciate your consideration.
Thank you very much. Brett Wilcox, do you want to bring up the next wave? Welcome to the committee, all of you.
I don't know how we're going to do this, but instead of me talking, each of the members can.
Okay. That's the director. That's the directional mic, so you might just aim at it in terms of speaking.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Mike Jordan. I was on the committee to represent cities on the Ingram Work Group. I've since changed roles. I'm now County Commissioner in Clackamas County, so perhaps have a unique view of the work from two perspectives. Very briefly, I'd just like to, first of all, thank the state for allowing me to be involved in this work. I've said this before to members of the committee. At the end of our work, I've been in public work for 15 years, and this was the most gratifying piece of work I've been involved in for a couple of reasons. One, I think the content of the work for local communities is a significant first step, and I'll emphasize first step. You're on a journey here. You're trying to change the way we do business. It's taken us, as has been noted, over 100 years to get to the way we do it today. We won't change the way we do it overnight. It's going to be a long journey. We realized that early on in our process. I think the content of the work from the group falls into two categories, and that is the category of how we actually put things on the ground in local communities and how we actually make them better places for our citizens to live. And secondly, and probably in my view more importantly, is the process piece, is how we do it, not what we do, but how we do it. I think we've made a major change in that paradigm, if you will. We at the local level have been very used to prescriptive programs from state. They told us how to do it, they told us how to apply, they told us the criteria for making the decision. And then they told us what they were going to do. What they were going to do for us. And it was actually a game that some of us got very good at. Others of us didn't. And I think this program and the way it's set up is one of the great advantages to this new way of doing business. Is that it is flexible enough to apply resources to places that couldn't be partners. There was no there. And this allows us the flexibility across the state to take communities that don't have the capacity to be a partner even and allow them to access resources from the state across a myriad of topics and make themselves into places where they can actually be a partner, where they can actually decide what it is that they'd like to accomplish in their community. I think there's a number of us want to speak, so I'm going to stop there, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here this morning. Thank you.
If the committee doesn't mind, I think consider preferring to break at 9:45. We try to push through till 10 to allow these people who've arrived from out of town to speak. What I'd also like to do is I'm requesting that the Senate members get excused until 10 to be here to show our courtesies to the participants. So with that, we'll take the next speaker. Welcome.
Thank you, Senator Hannah and members of the committee. I'm Candace Bartow from Grants Pass. a member of the interim work group, and I've worn a number of hats over the last few years. I came to the work group as a business and community citizen, I guess, to the committee. Before that, I was mayor of Grants Pass and president of the league, so I've had a lot of other kinds of governmental experiences, too. Currently, though, about 3.5 months ago, I started working for SoReady, which is our regional economic development group in Jackson and Josephine County. And in that capacity, I am the staff for the regional partnership, which is what we've done here with the interim working group. And I've also been providing some support to the community solutions team. So I can tell you firsthand, I think, how things are working on the ground, if it's working. And I can tell you it's been very tough. It hasn't been smooth along the way, but it is working. People are starting to get the idea. The community solutions team, I was interested in some of your questions because, you know, at a different time, I think I could answer them for you. It's been tough for them, but they are working together. And between the CST and the regional partnership, things are happening in Jackson, Josephine County. As you well know, I'm sure Josephine County is one of the poorest counties in the state. And we didn't see the economic boom, and we are working hard to regain ourselves. And this is helping. It's making the individual communities feel stronger. It's making the region feel stronger. And it's certainly going to take several years, but in the first 6 months of putting it together, I think we are seeing some positive results. And I'll leave it at that.
Thank you very much.
Good morning, Chairman Hannon and members of the committee. My name is Michael Sykes, and I, like Michael Jordan, have changed hats. I'm the city administrator of Vernonia, but prior to that time, I was the recruitment manager slash assistant manager for the Port of St. Helens and was a member of the work group in that capacity. I also served as 10 years as a county commissioner and served as the president of the Association of Oregon Counties during that period, and I think that helped give me a perspective. But I guess I'd like to start by saying thank you to the legislature and to the governor for creating this committee and giving us time in between sessions to take pause, to take a look at what we're doing, and see how we can make it better. And I guess what I would like to, the message I would like to convey is that I've kind of watched the Economic Development Department kind of evolve over time. All of us probably remember when Governor Goldschmidt talked about regional strategies, and we started this one industry focus in each region. And what was real interesting is back in 1985, cities and counties and ports and legislators didn't talk at all about economic development. They didn't talk at all about how to wisely invest limited resources. And what's happened over the last 10 years has been more and more collaboration, more partnership, and that's really important. And I think that you all recognize how important that is at a time when you have so many different competing interests wanting resources. So the best thing all of us can do is use those resources wisely. One of the things that I've recognized in my career is that I was involved with Dick Wright when he announced that Trojan was going to close in Rainier. It cost that community 1,000 jobs. And also was involved in helping bring some new industry to our area. And the thing that I've noticed is that those communities that are prepared are the ones that are successful in bringing new industry, and new industry helps. It is so critical in rebuilding our economies. I think we all recognize that. But the bottom line is that sometimes what we learned is that if we're not prepared, we're not successful. And basically having one organization, the community solution team, where local governments can go to find resources and to make sure that we coordinate those resources both at the state and at the local level to target our communities in the most effective fashion, I think is going to be a legacy of this committee and of the legislature. And thank you.
Thank you very much.
I'm Jim Wilcox from the Dell. The other Wilcox in no way related to Brad. He won't claim me. Grew up on the dry side of the state. Still live in the dry side of the state. Took the opportunity to live in rural communities. The last numbers I saw, and they were for February, 20 of 36 counties in Oregon still had double-digit unemployment. So I don't think we're there yet in economic development. I firmly believe in what came out in this report. Interesting thing, observations in the process. We had a meeting in Hood River. There were over 100 people in the audience. Of the 100 people, between 90 and 95 were employed, paid by economic development dollars of some sort, whether it came from a port, a city, a county, economic development districts, all the people that are working on economic development. And I made the comment there, God, just cut that down to 5 people working for that, put the rest of their salaries, put it into infrastructure, think what we could do. But from that, everybody was there. If we had that many people, and there were more acronyms than we have letters on these pages I brought with me today, but there was participation, a broad participation. And of course, going into it, I was pretty skeptical. I thought, well, government's not listening, government's not doing the job. And then as further we got into it and we developed the community solution team concept and went back, it was real interesting how local government didn't want to get together. Because, my God, I might have to give up some of my territory, county, city, port. And so the battle was there, too. How can you respond at the state level if the local level doesn't have their act together? Through the process, I think that's happening. But it did turn me around. And I got very critical of my local level. And I think I have a pretty good one. But I had to go to county court and insinuate that if they didn't join into the partnership that they're in now, I would take it to our local paper and ask publicly, why aren't you getting in on this? And it took that kind of activism to get our county court joined in with one of the partnerships they're in. I can report, and because I do not work for government except for the first 5 months of the year to pay my taxes, that as an outsider, I've kept my ears open, and the people that are involved in the regional, our local regional community solutions team, they're enjoying what's happening. ODOT's talking to other agencies. I think that's incredibly important, and you know, it kind of blew my mind. They don't talk to each other. In the profession I'm in, if you've got a problem with your competitor, you call them on the phone, you figure it out. Well, these people weren't talking. And as Brett said, there were silos, and I mean, they were thick. They would have withstood an atomic attack. I want to give credit to the governor for leading in that before we got very far into this, he had created at the top level those 5 agencies and said, you will work together. And I think that was a good example. It filtered down, and again, it was with the leadership of the Economic Development Department. Those 5 agencies at the regional level got regionalized. What took the time was getting the locals to form their region. So it's been done. Now, there was Senator Yee made the comment, how do we measure this by jobs? Well, I can tell you my community, we will have no more jobs until we have infrastructure to support more housing, to support more industry. We're out of sewer capacity. And we're a relatively wealthy community. The Dalles, compared to Rufus, any of Sherman County or Dillon County, is a pretty wealthy place in that mini region. But we're hurting. We can't expand. We're stuck. We need help. And if we need help, it's certain those smaller communities need the help. The structure is there. I would hope you would support the structure. And if you're looking for accountability, come back to the thing that I insisted on. We started out what should have been a one-page document turned into a small book. If you get tired of reading, go back to the front page. It says, solving problems, not running programs. That is the key to the entire document. If you want to look for accountability, look at those 5 state department heads, the governor, or the regional solution teams. And if they're not solving problems, then they're probably running programs, and that's not what they're supposed to be doing according to this document. So when all else fails, it goes back to the top. The other thing I think really important that we remember, no matter how many dollars you throw at economic development, there's other things that hinder it, and that's regulation. You run other committees that have to do with regulation that can hinder the very things that are happening, and it might be through water or DLCD, whatever. Pay attention to those too, because those can be very, very crippling to economic development in rural areas. Under all of the land, upon its wise use, and utilization depends the survival of our free institutions and our civilization. We should recognize that the interests of the nation and, its citizens, and the state and its citizens require the highest and best use of the land and the widest distribution of land ownership. It requires the creation of adequate housing, the building of functioning cities, the development of productive industries and farms, and the preservation of a healthful environment. That's the first paragraph of the Code of Ethics that I subscribe to as a realtor. I think it's a pretty good paragraph for us all to subscribe to as we try to build our state and our individual communities. Please support this with dollars and the outline that we've done with Community Solution Team.
Thank you very much.
I'm Gretchen Pierce from Eugene. I am an ex-Economic Development Commissioner and did serve on the Interim Workgroup on Economic Development. And in that capacity, I was also asked to chair the Subcommittee on Developing Principles of Investment. Briefly, the principles are frankly ones that were used in economic development, certainly from the time I served as the Commissioner, but are now embedded in not only the work group product, but the Economic Development Department in any case. And they include flexibility, partnerships, accountability, and efficiency, all of which we've talked about this morning as it is. And Jim did steal a little bit of my thunder, but I came up here today to specifically address two of those principles that are near and dear to my heart. The first one is flexibility. And there are commissioners here that I served with and can tell you that it didn't take longer than about, depending on whether you call minutes, hours, or weeks of being an economic development commissioner, to ask the question why we did not have a few pots of money that were well-funded and more flexible rather than, frankly, a list that was exhausting of little pots of money with regulations and guidelines for each that had evolved over the years. I mean, we found that it was very difficult to get the job done when we had to go through, even inside our own department, books and books and books of rules for each of these little pots that, quite honestly, are being created more by legislative action than certainly by design of the Economic Development Department. The best thing that's come out of this, as far as I'm concerned, is our willingness to return to a few pots of reasonably funded money that can be allocated by the Economic Development Commission. It puts them in a position of being much more flexible and responsive to these needs, especially because the focus has really changed over the years to rural and urban distressed as it is. This is not something brand new. I mean, in fact, we've been evolving in that direction for some time. So I encourage you very strongly to continue to endorse that concept through this program. The second thing that I wanted to respond to is the issue of accountability, and simply to echo what Jim Wilcox just said. Part of the difficulty in diverting funds to rural and urban distressed is that much of that need is very basic infrastructure. And honestly, you cannot expect and should not expect jobs to materialize instantly out of investment in basic infrastructure. So be thoughtful when you ask us to be accountable for the money, that we find ways to set performance measures and benchmarks that make sense for the kinds of investments that have to be made. And as you divert more and more of this money to rural areas, think about what really makes the biggest impact on rural areas to even get them prepared for economic development. And sometimes the actual results, i.e. jobs coming to town, aren't going to be measured for quite some time. The fact that we actually were able to treat water and sewer, and we can document that, may be the most important benchmark, but it may not produce jobs for several years. So those are the two kind of messages that I wanted to pass on through this work. I am certainly very supportive of this direction. I think it's a huge step to really evolve in a meaningful way to the community development concept,
and I really hope that you all endorse the effort. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
My name is Jose Campos. I'm an economic development commissioner. I'm also a member of a governor's small business council. But I believe more importantly, I'm a small business owner. And one comment and one suggestion today. The comment was how inclusive the task force, the workforce was. Not only in terms of the makeup of the group, but also the fact that we met throughout the state and that enabled local officials, business owners, and volunteers to actually participate in the process. So it was a good experience for me. It truly was customer-driven, as we like to say. The suggestion that I have is that these kinds of changes, frankly, there's no instant pudding. These kinds of changes take time, and the journey has just started. So I hope we all join together in making sure that the changes that we have made and we're proposing are actually baked in and woven into the fiber so that they stick and they actually make a long-term difference. We have a great start, but we have a few more steps to go. Finally, a comment about the Economic Development Commission. As Gretchen says, I'm proud to serve in that commission. It's made up of five individuals that are well anchored in reality. Four of the five are business owners. And the, over the years, I have seen how the group brings a lot of level-headedness to the process of economic development. Thank you.
Chair Hannah, for the record, my name is Mike MacArthur. I'm the county judge in Sherman County, Oregon, one of those poverty-stricken places you heard about earlier. I'm also the current president of the Association of Oregon Counties and a businessman. I have been involved in economic development for at least 8 years, and during seven years as a county official. During the last session, it was unfortunate to see the way the economic development program was treated. I didn't necessarily think it was broken, but as a result of the decisions that were made around economic development, the budget note, the work group was created, and I represented the counties on that work group. I was really excited and pleased to be involved in that process, and we were thanked earlier by the Senator Gordley, and I'd like to particularly thank the Economic Development Commission for participating in that process. That made a big difference, I think, in the tone and level of the discussion, as well as those legislative members that participated. I think the product that you have before you, the report, is one of the best pieces of work that's been done by an interim group that I've ever seen. I think that this is moving us in a new direction for the way government in general operates. I've participated in the implementation of the report. I think the committee and the people involved felt the ideas represented here were so good that we shouldn't wait until the next legislative session to implement them. We should move ahead, and we have. And this is, as you've heard with the pilot, this is working. I'm the chair of a pilot, the Lower John Day, that includes Wasco, Sherman, Yellum, Wheeler counties, and the tribes of Warm Springs. We've been moving ahead. We have a memorandum of understanding signed that talks about how we are going to relate to the state and how we're going to develop our policies. We're meeting with state agencies. It's really refreshing to see the attention and the way in which we interact with those state agencies. It's as you've heard before, improved communication locally with amongst the 16 cities and a couple of port districts and other entities in our region. We've identified infrastructure as our number one problem, and we're developing strategies to get at that problem. Obviously, in order to be able to deal with those problems, there's going to have to be some resources available. You've heard about the need for perhaps additional staff to make that work. In order for a community solutions team to have capacity to meet with all these regions, you need to have people who can come to the meetings, both on the state side and on the local side. You may have a community solutions team that is meeting in a region, but if there isn't any capacity at the county level, in order to deal with those folks, it's not much of a meeting. But we've been encouraged at the level of participation. Our region did something a little bit different. You've heard about flexibility here. We felt that because of our natural resource-based agricultural economy, we couldn't go forward very far without involving the Department of Agriculture. So we have included in a memorandum of understanding, as you'll notice, there's a representative of the lower John Day from the Department of Ag. Also, we felt it was very important to include the Department of Education, and they have agreed, and they are participating in our projects, in the discussions. The Community Solutions teams are meeting. That's one side of the table. The regional partnerships are meeting. That's the local side of the table. That table is a virtual table. In a lot of cases, particularly in Eastern Oregon, because of the distances involved. The person that represents housing has all of Eastern Oregon to cover. The person that represents DLCD has all of Eastern Oregon to cover, so sometimes their participation is by phone. We've had the experience of actually seeing a project implemented using this model, and it was in my county where we had a John Deere dealer wanted to locate in a small town. And what that does, when that project gets on the table, it gets the attention of everyone. And what we saw, they wanted to be just outside the urban growth boundary because that was the best site. So we had DLCD involved, but they wanted city services, sewer and water. So we had OEDD involved, but the piping size was critical to the cost, so we had DEQ involved. And then once sited, we need that access to the highway. So we had to have ODOT involved. The fact that all these agencies were talking when this project got on the table and all were able to address their particular aspect of this project before the project was actually started has made it go much smoother, and we've alerted everyone that this is coming so that they were able to deal with their aspect of it. The fact that they were able to talk together, I think, has made the project come together. It's also been nice to be able to talk more directly with Salem because you have the access through the Community Solutions team to the state agencies where the decisions are really made. So I think we have a model of the future. It's working. I can speak from our particular standpoint in the Lower John Day that it's a model of way of doing business in government that we should be proud of, but we do need the resources in order to be able to make it work, and so I hope that we can find those. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Brad, are there any more commissioners or task force members?
I think everyone is so eloquent. I just think it speaks for itself, the broad support of people that went through the process to come up with a report, both in terms of you now have a structure that works and also in terms of the need for additional resources to implement it. I want to take one quick minute, if you'll allow me, because in listening to the committee, I essentially have one overriding question, which is you seem to agree that, yeah, this is working well at the regional local level, but do we really need this other layer of state bureaucracy at the governor's office level? And I think if that's the concern, just as a business person that was involved in this, I think you do need the agency level and governor's office level support. And the reason is, Senator Hannah, you began by saying that the regional guys tend, in the past, were always just buffers to keep the problems from getting to agencies. You said, well, what about the lines of authority? Is that the departments? Don't they just report to the same old bosses? And both of those are exactly right on comments. And the problem is, if you have the same lines of authority and don't really create a matrix organization where there's somebody else that they're accountable to, you're going to end up with them just being buffers again. And what creating the governor's office level does is give you that other line of authority in the matrix organization to the CEO that will make it work at the local level. And so I think you really need to have that level there, both to prod the local people to make sure that they don't get back in the same old ways of just representing the department levels, and to break through these issues that always come up when you're trying to implement conflicting laws. And one thing that I just want to share with you that came out in our meeting, at one point we were considering a model of kind of block grants to all the local areas. You know, why do you need any statewide involvement at all? And we came to the conclusion that you needed to have this central state community solutions team involved for two reasons. Number one is state resources, and there are statewide priorities and laws and obligations. You need some place to implement that. But number two, the thing that surprised me is the local governments themselves at the end of the day said, we don't want this just block grant program. We want that community solutions team prioritization, because they were very concerned if you just left it to the local governments to divvy it up, you'd basically have just horse trading where you have the dollars just spread like peanut butter all over everything and not accomplish everything. And so having a state level there ensures that you focus on what really are the priorities and get, you know, some results, as opposed to just taking the dollars and spreading it like peanut butter. So I would really strongly urge you to support the statewide department head and governor's office involvement in funding.
Representative Patrick.
Sir, I just wanted to clarify, Richard, and maybe I didn't articulate myself well enough. I am fully supportive of having it at the governor's level, because I think that that's where people have the most concern, that government agencies are immovable bureaucracies. And what I'm saying is the governor's office to date has not defined how they're going to deal with that and who's going and what the decision making structure is going to be within their office, if it's going to be in DAS, where it's going to be. That's my largest concern, that we create these things at the local level and then they don't have any authority. They don't have the full faith and credit of the governor's office to be able to solve some of these bureaucratic issues. And what I'm looking for is a decision, maybe for lack of a better term, a decision-making model that says, you know, these regional coordinators are, we're going to have these community solutions team members with the regional coordinator, and the regional coordinator is going to report to whom, and what are they going to do? And I think that that's not, that is, has, is not what's been defined to me. And the other issue is, I think from my perspective and in talking with a lot of other members of the committee and sitting here, is that if we're going to create this new model where these people are going to go out and hopefully help solve problems instead of deliver programs, that why do we need all these new people then at the local level? I understand, you know, I look at this piece and I understand, like, I want to call him Representative Repine, because that's how I knew. Director Repine. You know, I understand housing has been Jackson, Josephine, South Central, and Eastern have the same person. I understand there's some resource issues in some of those departments, but if we're problem solving instead of delivering programs, then why do we need the additional FTE if what we're doing is moving towards some more efficiency? The problem before was, a lot of the time, departments were tripping over each other and creating more problems and more paperwork and more bureaucracy. And now I feel like you're not only trying to turn the decision-making on its head and make people talk to each other, but then you're asking for additional staff to do that. And I guess I need, in some of the departments I understand, but I guess to me it has to be proven that, you know, the first, is it going to work before I go out and we sit in this committee and make a recommendation for an additional almost 20 FTE on a statewide basis if what we're really doing is solving problems. And these are the community's biggest problems, I would hope, as they're bringing these out of these regional teams. Why do we need all this additional FTE? And in addition to that, why we, you know, what the decision-making model is. And that's all I'm looking for and when I go about it. So I want to make it clear that it's not that I have a problem being in the governor's office. I applaud the governor and the committee for saying that, but until that model is delivered back to me as a committee member, I can't be supportive of the fact that where it's going to go. It just feels like right now I have a lot of, I'm not going to give it on faith, I guess, at this point in time. I need to see something in writing. I'd like to see what the decision-making model is going to be, and I don't think that that's unreasonable to ask. If you had someone in your business who wanted a bunch of additional people, you'd want to know how it's going to work. And that's all I'm asking for, is how it's going to work. So.
Okay. This moment, Representative
Trader. Just a request for information from each of the department heads to get at some of the concerns, I think, that we're hearing here, and to get at a solution. It would be nice to have from each of the agencies how the decision-making process would go now, and I mean very specifically, from a local request to, you know, the final authority at the state level, and who you go through, who you would go through to get that decision. and then a side-by-side comparison organizationally on the same sheet of paper with the Community Solutions team, how would that same agency get to that same solution or same response? That would be very helpful for me to kind of see how this is a different and improved process.
Senator Yee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, going back to my question in the very beginning, how are you going to measure the effectiveness of the community teamwork program? So who's going to keep data of the state's investment in the program? How many jobs are created? What kind of return do we get for our investment? And how helpful we have been to each community? After all, we are all concerned with the double-digit unemployment in the rural area, and we want to know whether, in fact, we have done anything, have any impact in reducing unemployment. So who's going to keep track of the data, and how do we get the report?
In terms of jobs, the Economic Development Department is responsible for that. We do keep that data, and we will get it to you right away.
In the next
time. Well, we're doing it now, and we'll keep doing it, and we'll report to you on a regular basis, you know, quarterly if you'd like, whatever fits your personal schedule, so we can get that data to you. And we will do similar models like that for each of the problems out in the region you're trying to solve. You know, we want, when you read the report, we insist on accountability. If these programs aren't getting the results that you as legislators are defined as being key, then you should end it. We think we've created a model that will help get those results. And part of the whole structure is that before you get the dollars, you define specifically what the goals are and the performance measurements for whether you're achieving those goals. So it's built into the process for each particular project.
Yes.
How often is it reported to the commission?
In terms of jobs and impacts?
Yes.
We look at it at least twice a year. And for every major project, we'll look at that individually as it comes up, too. That data, obviously, we've heard you, and we'll get it to you right away.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Beck?
Yeah, I just had a sort of a question that maybe can be addressed in a subsequent hearing where we can talk about it later, but I'm concerned that I want to ensure these solution teams are empowered to local communities sometimes have solutions that really don't work, aren't right. They think that that's the answer, and they've thought that way for a long time, but in the end, it really doesn't work. It's been proven in other parts of the state or the country, it doesn't work. And I'm assuming that that's part of why these teams are getting set up, to help vet communities to understand that whatever you've always wanted to do isn't going to work, or whatever you've come up with recently really isn't going to work. I assume that that's kind of part of why these teams are set up. At some point, I'd like to hear whether there are examples of where you've seen local communities kind of reach new conclusions as a result of this kind of work. And in the future, do you expect these teams to be empowered to sort of stop the bad ideas and really kind of vet communities in solutions that really work at a statewide level or proven successful strategies?
I think you're right on. I think that's the point Grace was trying to make about why the goal is to empower the local communities, you still need the statewide involvement, because there are other things going on. There might have been tried someplace else and not worked that you need to bring up, or it might be a conflicting state priority. So I think that's one of the checks and balances. Another check is that we really are trying to get out the word about what are best practices, what works here, what didn't work there, so that people don't have to reinvent the wheel. And I think, now, to me, and I hadn't seen this chart before, but I've been involved in transportation a little bit before. It's just a very graphic example of exactly what you're saying. You had a community that was going on with wanting to expand to the other side of the road, probably a $12, $15 million interchange, and just bring the people together in the process and say, hey, you can do it over here, and it's a $3 million interchange. I mean, that's the magnitude of the changes of being able to get everybody together up front. And I think why the Department of Transportation is willing to put their dollars into other agencies.
President Patridge.
I would just encourage you, Mr. Wilcox, to maybe get your task, your interim work group together or something else in regards to giving the governor's office some direction on this. I've been meeting with them off and on for the last 2 months trying to get, you know, even some of the basics like what the job descriptions are, what the decision-making model is going to be for those teams. Those things are not completed yet. So I would encourage you to.
I heard your message loud and clear. Okay. I will talk to them and make sure we get that done.
The representatives have been hanging on just for a few moments. Senator Sumner and Paul, they're probably trying to get turnout of members. I'd like to say this briefly. Mr. Williams is here, the Vice Chair of the Economic Development Commission, head of the International Trade Division, or the component, and I'd like to have him make some comments. Welcome.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Bill Williams. I'm from Medford. I'm a businessman. I'm with Bear Creek Corporation, serving as president and CEO. Extemporaneous speaking is not my forte. I don't know exactly what the question is on the table, but I did jot down a few notes while I was sitting here. I apologize for being late. The role of the Economic Development Department is twofold. It impacts the quality of life in the state, and it provides economic opportunity for businesses, residents in the communities in the state. I support the work of the Interim Committee on Economic Development. I think they did an excellent job in clarifying what the role of the department is. They did an excellent job in improving the process and educating participants in what the process is. I think it's going to be much more efficient. There's a blueprint to follow. The communications are much better than they had been in the past. There certainly was room for improvement. I think the role of the symbolic role of the department is often overlooked. It is a place for people to go in the state that have a problem, whether it's an economic problem or a community infrastructure problem. It's a place to look for finding the best answers, sorting through all the alternatives. It's a resource that may come back with a negative answer sometimes, but sometimes a negative answer is the one that you need to hear just so you can move on to the next issue, the next task. I think the fact that historically that people or businesses or communities may find that they get a negative answer should not be taken as a failure on the Economic Development Department's part. I think that's a key role to help find the best answers and help prioritize how the state money is spent, and I think they do a good job in prioritizing and in finding the best answers. I also serve as the chair of the International Trade Commission, as you mentioned. I believe that is a very worthwhile effort on the state's part to promote international trade and to create jobs in Oregon through that effort. We also requested additional funds through this legislative session. Those are necessary for a variety of reasons. The first reason is that the funds over a period of time have been cut back, and there are major business segments, industrial segments in the state that are not funded to the level that they had been. The second is, as the globalization of the economy, of national economies occurs, it's very important to have a role, whether it's an office or trade missions or governor visits or legislative visits, it's very important to have a role overseas. And there is not the staff to do that and to support that at the moment. We felt on the commission that there was a lot of inefficiency in that, and that inefficiency was not because people weren't trying, it was because there wasn't a lot there weren't sufficient resources to do a good job. So we recommended that that budget be increased. I think that's about the extent of my comments. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Bill. Appreciate all of you being here today, and I'm sorry that we had to rush you through like you did because of the Senate schedule, and I believe our senators are still on their call. And so I'd ask my Senate colleagues to report to the floor, unless you want the police in the condition and escort you.
Is there time to ask a question?
Sure. Senator Yee, there's always time.
Thank you. Mr. Lindman, what kind of plans does the International Trade Commission have for the next biennium to increase international trade opportunities?
We are awaiting the results of our budget request. That will help determine exactly what we can do.
But what's your plan?
What
is your budget based on?
The budget is based on adding a trade representative for wood products and building materials in the state to help promote state businesses overseas and to help organize their efforts to penetrate overseas markets. It's also based on adding an assistant director or an associate director role to coordinate the overseas offices. Currently, we have several offices that do not get regular visits from the department, managed rather loosely, and frankly, and be very open about it, there are not any criteria to evaluate their performance. We take it on a matter of faith and anecdotal information that they are busy all the time and that they are doing the state's work. So we feel that there increased management is required before we invest in more state offices, and we feel that someone is required from the department to visit various markets that can potentially support an office or a consulting relationship with the state, serve as the state's consultant or agent. We're looking at this point, several things in terms of execution. The first one is fitting the international division into the reorganization of the Economic Development Department. And I think that's going very well. Getting that resource out of Portland on a more frequent basis, assigning it to teams around the state, is going to have a very beneficial effect. Secondly, we're looking at what markets we would invest in. As you know, we've looked at Mexico, China, South Africa, Europe. We dismissed several other potential markets, Canada because it was close and we didn't have a language barrier, and it is already an important trade partner. Some of the Middle Eastern and Asian countries because of the economic crisis in Asia and political problems in Russia, that sort of thing. So we did a thorough evaluation of where we could potentially put our state funds, and are working at this point, as I believe most of the commission members or committee members know, working right now on trying to find the best and highest use for those funds throughout the four markets that we identified as priority markets. Did I ramble a little bit too much here?
Senator, if you don't mind, because of the time and the commission has a meeting, scheduled public meeting, I would ask that maybe we deal with some of these things in their budget when we get to the Department of Economic Development budget, because I think there's a list of priorities on how they want to approach the issue of international trade in their budget, and that'll be a subject of discussion when we have the budget.
Right. Mr. Chairman, I just want to say they have done a survey on those four markets. Maybe that survey should be made available to the committee members because it's very telling where are the potentials going to be, and that survey will give us that kind of information.
Yes.
If there's no further discussion, we will be adjourned until after the full Ways and Means in the morning, and we'll have a work session immediately following on housing community development. Thank you, everybody, for your participation today.